Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by AOL Radio at AOL.com/podcasting. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 95 for April 16th, 2007. Tastes like chicken. It's time for This Week in Tech, and we're assembling a panel of opposing forces. It's going to be interesting. In one corner, on the left, we've got CNET in the face and shape of Mr. Tom Merritt of Buzz Out Loud. Hey, Tom.
Hey, how's it going, Leo? Thanks for having me on.
Always good to have you on. I love doing it. In return, I'll do Buzz Out Loud on Monday.
It's a deal.
And also from CNET, a guy who's not been on TWiT before, but is a revered name in broadcast news. Longtime a famous news director at KPIX in Channel 5 in San Francisco. Then he was our news director at Tech TV. And now, what do you do, Harry Fuller, at CNET?
Good question, what I do. I worry about the front door and video and all kinds of stuff.
You're an executive editor.
Yeah, I edit all the executives.
Somebody's got it.
Somebody's got to watch them.
It's great to have you, Harry.
Thank you
for joining us. Get closer to the mic because we want to hear every bit of your pearls of wisdom.
You got it.
Never have to get any closer to Mr. Patrick Norton. He's always right up on top of the mic. Mr. Patrick DL.
I turned my volume down.
He's in the Ziff Davis corner. We've got two over there. Also, the cranky geek himself, John C. Dvorak. .org/blog.
What was that again?
.org/blog. You know, it has a ring to it, a cadence. And somebody's got a bicycle bell, it sounds like.
It has a ring to it, you said.
Yeah, what was that?
Oh, I get it. John's always wanted to be a shock jock. I hear there's an opening now at CBS. Maybe.
Yeah, I heard that, too.
Dimas used to, every time he did the time checks when he worked at WNBC, would play the duck quack. He'd say, 653, on WNBC. I'm going to miss him.
You got his voice. You could take that job.
I used to in college. I would get up early just to listen to Don Imus on WNBC.
Yeah, I just can't believe, right. You know, Dr. Reverend Billy Saul Hargis of the First Church of the Gooey Death and Discount House of Worship has fallen so far.
Did he do that? He did. I don't think he's been doing Billy Saul or any of those characters.
No, but I mean,
no,
when
not
I was
in this administration.
No, but when I was you know, living in North Jersey,
that's
and
right.
He was all over the morning show.
That's right.
That was a huge part of it. Nuking people's it was fun.
Great stuff. What do you think Imus will find a job right away? It's not a tech story, but I'm just curious.
He'll go right to the satellite place.
That's what I figured.
50-50 chance they won't touch him because they've got to get through Washington, D.C. politically correct. They want their merger, and they're not going to infuriate any of the politically correct people in Washington right now.
Politically correct? You mean incredibly uptight.
Well, that however you want to translate it. I think Imus is radioactive until after the merger.
Okay, well, that's fine, but he's still going to end up there. And besides, it's not that he needs the money. He could be picked up by one of the Earthbound stations. I don't see why not.
He should just start podcasting.
How about New York?
He may do that.
I don't know.
He may
maybe because he's insulted a bunch of people. Advertisers won't touch him with a stick, and the Rutgers basketball team hasn't accepted his apology but not forgiven him yet.
Yeah.
It was a nasty thing to say, I have to say.
He can go online.
It wasn't anything worse than something Andrew Dice Clay would say.
Yeah, but Andrew Dice Clay
isn't on
radio.
Broadcast. Yeah.
Was he not? Oh, I said he was.
There is a tech angle.
Nor is he another role model.
There is a tech angle to this because it was the Media Watch blog that picked it up. Imus's statement was at 6:15 in the morning. Nobody really heard it. There was no ruckus raised except by Media Watch. They immediately sent out email blasts to newspapers and news editors and blogged it. And I think it was that.
I agree. He was targeted.
Yep. And a lot of blog sites posted video once they finally got onto it.
Is it the worst thing he's ever said? I really don't listen to the guy ever.
Seems unlikely.
I don't remember him saying anything
there.
Like that.
It's a though. Pretty, yeah. I mean, you know, the basketball team just comes out of an NCAA match and he says something that obnoxious.
It was a crummy thing to say.
Well, I don't know.
He said
about a year ago, in fact, almost exactly a year ago, when the female reporter that worked for the Christian Science Monitor had gotten released by whoever's holding her hostage in the Middle East, He basically accused her of sleeping with her captives.
That's pretty bad.
I got the idea that that's what he built his career on, was saying stuff like that to get people all riled up.
Used to call David Borman pantload. I thought that was... remember Borman?
Yes.
He was the NBC vice president or executive producer who put Imus on MSNBC. I'm sure he's long gone. In fact, he went to CNBC. Or CNN. CNN, yeah. So he's long gone from there. All right, big story, of course, and it's a story we missed with our Mac show. By one day. We seem to be doing that a lot with the Mac show.
Mac's always a day late and a dollar short.
It's true. Apple, and I'm very curious what you guys think of this. Apple goes to the PR Newswire, releases a story, very simple story. In fact, maybe I'll read the actual Apple copy, because they've been accused by Herb Greenberg and others now of spinning the story, basically saying, we've been working so hard on the iPhone... And boy, by the way, incidentally, the iPhone has passed several of its tests so far, and we are still on track for a June release. But we've been
late
working
June.
Late June. Yeah, that's not the June 11th that everybody's been saying. We've been working so hard on the iPhone that, oh, golly, we just don't have the resources to work on Leopard, and we're going to have to delay that for 3 months till October.
Right, which of course assumes that the same people that would work on a phone and a mobile phone would be the exact same people working on Leopard. What do they do? Pull those guys off of Leopard?
Obviously, iPhone's running
no
Leopard.
Sense.
But the phone is running OS 10. Didn't you remember? Steve Jobs says the iPhone is running OS 10.
I think despite Apple's positive, Pollyanna spin that they put on this press release, there's almost no way not to interpret this negatively. Either they're such a small company that they've only got 10 people working for them.
We've so misallocated our resources, or conversely, we've so realized we make so little money off of the operating system, we've decided to completely throw in the consumer electronics direction.
Well, and that's what Macworld says. Macworld says the iPhone isn't a distraction. It's the point. Who cares about the OS, says Macworld magazine.
I do.
I do, too.
I care more about
the
OS than the silly iPhone.
Macworld magazine?
Of all people said that.
Of all people?
Yeah, that's kind
of a surprise. I didn't know that. That is weird.
This is Peter Cohen.
No, it's not. What percentage of Apple's revenue comes from the iPod and iTunes now?
I know, but Macworld magazine is supposed to be about the Macintosh, not about Apple, not a company like who cares about the company's bottom
line. Just because
line.
They're Macworld and they're an enthusiastic, publication doesn't mean they can't have a strong sense of reality.
Well, I got another sense of reality for you. I think the problem with Apple, if they're having problems with their operating system, is the fact that Steve Jobs runs a feudal system and nobody can do anything on the plantation without his permission.
Yeah.
And he's only got so many hours a day and he's running two corporations and he's on the board of ABC.
The problem is not that there's only 10 employees. The problem is there's only one Steve Jobs.
That's right. There's one decision maker, and I'll bet he has to sign off at anything bigger than a paperclip.
Or other negative possibilities. Leopard is in such trouble. They were going to slip it anyway, and I've heard a lot of people kind of behind the scenes saying, Leopard not looking so good. It crashed at Macworld Expo. I remember when they were demoing.
Are we saying spotty performance from Leopard?
Well, how about this for a more obscure idea? Although, in reality, I agree with Harry. But how about this for an idea? Leopard was having nothing but problems to the point where they dreamed up the whole iPhone scam just to distract people from Leopard.
I smell a column.
And they will never release the phone.
I smell a column. Here's the other negative
scenario. Phony phone. I like that. That's better than Leopard spots.
Here's Herb Greenberg's scenario for MarketWatch. He says the iPhone is in trouble. He says, notice they say we've passed some of our tests, but not all of our tests.
Oh, boy.
And
that 22 minutes of battery life is really killing us.
Well, and he says, and I think this is credible, they pre-announced the iPhone prematurely to cover up poor iPod sales. They fooled the stock market, obviously. Apple stock's been on a tear, and now they're in a little bit of trouble.
Do you think it's time for them to rip up OS 10 and start over again, if they're really having trouble with Leopard?
I don't think so. I think the core of OS 10 is solid. I think maybe Leopard was more ambitious than it ought to be, but OS 10 as it stands now is a very solid operating system. It certainly competes well with Vista.
Well, while we're dealing with conspiracy theories, the fact that their house organ, which is really the Wall Street Journal and not Macworld, hasn't said anything positive about iPhone in a while makes you very suspicious.
You're talking about Walt Wasper.
That's the one.
I noticed Walt wrote an article. His most recent tech column is about how to get all the crap off of PCs, and he manages to sneak the Mac in there anyway and say, but this isn't a problem on Apple's software. Interesting. Boy, talk about house organ. So what do we say? Is this what's the vote? Bad news for Apple? Is it?
You know, they always get through this stuff. I'm not worried about it. I'm still thinking that the real problem is the fact that they want to get into the phone industry in the first place, which is my argument. I think it's just a bad business to be in.
But what about the Mac faithful? I mean, doesn't this really say we aren't a computer company anymore?
That's what they're trying to say.
I think maybe they shouldn't be.
I think that's a scary thing.
I agree with John on that. I think they've realized that they can only go so far with the computer side of things, and they can make a lot of money on devices. I don't know if the iPhone's going to be the next iPod for them, though. That's the big problem.
They're up against some big players in Samsung and Nokia.
I just bought a Nokia N95.
Motorola and Nokia, the big two.
Yeah.
Well, you know, one little bit of FUD out there is my wife's trying to find a phone to go with her Mac, and everything she reads says, well, you can get the Trio, but it's not great. Really, the best one for it's going to be the iPhone. And just discounting every other phone if you already have a Mac, which plays into that Apple way of thinking,
the
only good things that really work with our products are our products.
It's not true, I have to say. BlackBerry works fine. My Nokia syncs fine.
You can pick up the missing sync, which will actually sync most of the major phones with OS X applications.
And I've heard some people complaining that even the Trio syncing doesn't work that well with the Mac, that others work better.
Well, no, that's syncing is always a problem.
But there are ways to, does
Active Sync or whatever they call it now in Vista work with Windows Mobile 5? Not very well.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Syncing is always a problem.
Sync stinks.
Bill Gates heading into space, a Russian cosmonaut said.
Yeah, no way.
No way. He says Charles Simonyi, who's up there with him right now, the current space tourist. Simonyi is a Microsoft programmer, was a Microsoft programmer.
Wait a minute,
give me a chance. I gotta do the accent.
I'm sorry.
Really, John, I'm shocked.
My timing's off today.
Fyodor Yurchichkin says, Charles says the Bill Gates also preparing to visit space. So next time someone will be with Bill Gates, for me, this is biggest surprise of flight.
Russians could say the letter V. What is that?
Accents so well. I mean, the two best ones, your Indian one isn't any good, by the way, but your Russian and your German. And the Russian accent, I don't think is that easy to do, because I've been trying to do it. I know people that have that accent, and I can't copy it.
Apparently,
это хорошо accent.
You're going to have to teach it to me.
Очень хорошо. Apparently, Gates visited Star City just a couple of months ago, the Cosmonaut Training Center.
And to buy it.
Yeah. Actually, to sell Vista.
I blogged this, by the way, and you can check it out, dvorak.org/blog. But
where is that?
Look up Gates. But anyway, I wrote that I don't believe there's any chance in tarnation, as it were, that Gates would ever do this. It's not his style. It's not his style to waste money like that. He's a guy who doesn't like to be that way. He doesn't like limos.
He
doesn't have a yacht.
John, this is the best midlife crisis ever. Forget the sports car. Forget the bogus 482-foot yacht. He's basically just looking at all these schmucks with $1 billion that are peeing away their money and just going, you know what? A quick $20 million trip to the space, I'm good.
Russian rockets are red. It's perfect.
Buy a chunk of a launch company.
Will the board of trustees, will the stockholders let him?
That's the other question I had.
He won't go till he steps down from the Microsoft.
Yeah, it's his retirement.
The stockholders cannot let a guy like Bill Gates, who is Microsoft, do this kind of a joyride. It's just too. I think that if you did the stats on it, it's probably a risky trip.
I think with $30 billion in the bank, he can figure out a way to absolve himself of fiduciary responsibility to the stockholders.
I don't think it's that. I just think, I think they'll just beat him up or something. They'll just tie him.
Who cares?
why is everybody so interested in or so positive about these guys throwing away money like this on these ridiculous trips, which are meaningless?
Well, I think it's better than some of the other ridiculous. I mean, first of all, if you got the money, it's your right to spend it, But the thing
there's no social responsibility anymore in the United States or any place else, apparently, listening to you. Leo, by the way, has your opinion, so you should think about that for a minute.
I haven't finished what I was saying.
Gates has given away more money than anybody else in the history of the planet.
I mean, Gates, basically, if anybody deserves a quick $20 million shot into space, it's Gates. Look at the amount of money he's giving. He's basically stamping out entire forms of disease.
What disease has he stamped out?
Oh, gosh. Give me a moment and I'll get
Space fever, for one.
He hasn't stamped anything out, but he's planning to stamp out AIDS in Africa.
Yeah, you think I mean, at least he's trying to. I mean, John, yeah, you know, people waste money constantly around the world. You know, ridiculous yachts, pathetic homes, you know, stupid efforts. But, you know, if Gates wants to go to the moon, I mean, considering what he's trying to do.
Was he going to the moon or is he going to the International Space Station or is he just going into orbit? You know, they say these people are going into space and half the time they're just going up on a suborbital flight and getting weightless and coming down, and that's not going into space.
Simonia's still up there. So
they're going to the space station.
Okay, they're going to the space station. That's
for 25 million. I said moon should, by accident.
For
25
for 25 million, you should at least get to stay in a 3x4 cubicle and pee into a bag for a couple of weeks. I think that's only
well, there's
fair.
Something funny
eat
about
powdered
that
Neapolitan ice cream.
Yeah,
and $25 million and be you know crapping in your own pants.
Do you, honest question? Do you think he'd pass the medical? To get
Gates?
Up there? Yeah.
If Simonia can, I imagine Bill can.
I think he has low blood pressure.
Simonia's a little more athletic. You know, Bill's not, you know, in I mean, golf's a lot.
He can jump
lot.
Over a chair.
Is that the test?
And he's certainly saner than the astronaut lady who tried to shoot her boyfriend.
Drive,
yeah,
right.
That's true.
But he's got the diapers to prove it. Can he still jump? Remember that he used to do that, Patrick? He would jump. It was his trick. He would jump over a chair from a standing start.
Yeah.
I wonder if he can
put it this way. If Gates needs to get healthy to go have his trip in space,
good point.
He's going to call up Chris Carmichael. Carmichael's going to recommend, you know, he's going to buy a training team, you know, and he'll be the fittest bazillionaire on the planet.
Well, it just always hits me when you hear about these people buying their way into space. It's like, you have to be in pretty good medical condition to go up there. It's not like you just need to have the money. I mean, that's no easy thing to do. It's
pulling
pretty hard on
sucks.
You. Yeah. You know, you've been up in one of those Blue Angels, I know.
He passed out. We got film.
Well,
we got video.
I don't think it's going to happen. That's it. I'll put money on it.
Paul Graham, the man who began the fad for Bayesian filters and the spam, he's really, I think, a very bright guy, says Microsoft's dead. He now works for Yahoo, by the way.
Now Bill doesn't have to worry about it.
Doesn't have to worry. a few days ago, says Paul, I suddenly realized Microsoft was dead. It happens when he was talking to a young
when he
startup.
He was kicking the corpse.
He is. And he has four reasons why Microsoft's dead. You want to hear him?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
What killed Microsoft? Number one, Google. There can only be one big man in town. They're clearly it. Google is the most dangerous company now by far, both the good and bad senses of the word. Microsoft can, at best, limp along afterwards. Number two.
Sound like Paul Harvey there. Do it as Paul Harvey.
Harvey. Page two.
Page two.
Page two. Hello, American. Stand by for news. Number two, Ajax, of all things, which ironically is...
We all laugh at that one.
Well, here's... You know,
he means the cleanser.
Yeah, right. Mr. Clean. No, what he's saying is that web services have become so good that desktop applications don't make sense anymore.
I hate that statement.
We're going to do everything on the web because everybody's always connected all the time.
Hello?
It rings the bell again.
stupid. Like, it's like the whole Web 2.0 is coming next week.
It'll be here.
We're sending Roger with a camera to just go off on it.
Mock them.
I've been using Google Spreadsheet in for work for some things, and it's really limited still. I mean, you can make it work, but it does not do the things that you can do in Excel or even OpenOffice. So they are not ready to move everything on the web.
No, it's ridiculous. That thing, we're 20 years away from what that.
And your six-hour flight on New York, what are you going to do? Play games on your laptop?
Number three,
you could probably download, you know, most of the stuff, including like a, you know.
Well, and you're going to have broadband on planes anyway.
But
yeah,
some Ajax thing the other day, and people get too carried away with this, so it had a drop down and then a slide over, and then if you drop down and you didn't move the mouse fast enough, it popped back up. And
websites are like those old magician tricks now with the boxes that slide and doors open.
It's ridiculous. It's crappy.
Yeah. Third cause, broadband internet. Anyone who cares can have fast internet access now. By the way, even on airplanes, that's coming any minute now. What are you laughing at? It's true.
Yeah, just like that power jack in every seat.
Hey, no, I used it on SAS.
Jack?
It was great. It was
you
great.
Know, they mentioned, we mentioned that story about the broadband on airplanes on Buzz Out Loud, and everybody wrote in from Europe saying, yeah, we had that on Lufthansa.
Yeah.
I used it, and then they took it away because they couldn't make any money on it.
Well, yeah.
So enjoy it while you can.
Yeah. Last nail in the coffin, Apple. Thanks to OS X, Apple came back from the dead in a way that's extremely rare in technology. Their victory is so complete, says Paul Graham. I'm now surprised when I come across a computer running Windows.
Oh, that's really? So, that's the biggest.
Look, there's one over there.
Apple came back from the dead because of the iPod. Well, okay, the Mac, first the iMac, but the iPod's what's made them a relatively lucrative company.
That's what made the stock rocket.
He says, I'm glad Microsoft is dead. They were like Nero or Commodus, evil in the way only inherited power can make you. But remember, Microsoft monopoly didn't begin with Microsoft. They got it from IBM.
So I suspect.
And so IBM, by all this logic, is dead as well.
Well, IBM's been dead for 30 years.
I guess when he went over to Microsoft asking for work, they told him to shove it. And then so now he went to Yahoo and gave this remark. Okay, makes sense.
Here's how he suggests Microsoft could revive itself. Are you interested?
I would just suggest one thing, that 5 years from now, Microsoft will be worth a hell of a lot more than Yahoo.
It's only technical death. It's not biological death.
Right. Okay. Resurrection is possible if Microsoft buys all the good Web 2.0 startups. I'm waiting for John.
He must have a piece of one of them.
Probably a piece of all
running,
of them.
He runs Y Combinator, or Combinator, or however you pronounce that. Y Combinator is the Yahoo startup incubator. He says they could get substantially all of them for less than they'd have to pay for Facebook. Yeah, just buy everybody. Number two, put them all in a building in Silicon Valley surrounded by lead shielding to protect them from any contact with Redmond. I think we'd all agree with that, though.
Yeah, because Redmond's, really hasn't been making money for years.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if they're
really can squash creativity pretty quick, yeah. I guess. But
I'm not arguing that, but I'm just like, with all due respect, most of the websites are still looking around to be bought. That's the business model.
There's not much else you can do. I mean, with Sarbanes-Oxley, which is a destructive force that needs to be repealed, there's not much else these companies can do. This has got to end, the Sarbanes-Oxley thing.
Speaking of got to end, Tim O'Reilly says uncivility on the internet, it has to end, and he's created...
Shut up, Tim.
F you, Tim.
He's so full of it.
This all began, of course, with Sierra.
He should talk to Don Imus. Talking to civility here.
Civility. I got you, civility.
That's a good
right
point.
Here.
Actually, Cooper wrote up that. Yeah.
Kathy Sierra is the blogger who was threatened with some pretty nasty death threats and pictures. She decided to skip O'Reilly's eTech conference in fear for her life. This has kind of prompted, you've seen mainstream media stories all over in every venue on what's wrong. Why are people so rude online? And O'Reilly wants to solve it with his blogger.
I think we talked about this the other day, and I concluded that they're not as rude as they used to be. I think things have really mellowed out compared to, if you go back to the 80s when you were on one of the Usenet news groups or doing anything online, the kind of unbelievable flaming that went on was nothing. I mean, it was just way beyond. It was magnitudes worse than it is today.
I'll tell you where all the flaming is going on right now. People flaming Tim O'Reilly for this idea.
Maybe he's trying to stir it up.
I don't know. I mean, the idea isn't such a bad idea. A code of ethics for bloggers is fine. I mean, it doesn't carry any legal weight or anything like that.
It won't carry any weight.
It reminds me of what they did with the code. They did a code of ethics for journalism back in what, the 50s or late
40s? The code of ethics for journalism has been co-opted by the New York Times for the sole purpose of promoting the New York Times. And I could give you don't get me started on this.
But when it came out, it was a good thing at the time, don't you
think,
John? This
isn't exactly ethics, though. This is more like...
These
are manners,
nice.
Right?
Yeah, it's manner. Here, I'll read you a little bit from the first draft.
There's a difference between ethics
Rule
and
number
manners.
One, don't threaten to kill people because you disagree with their opinion.
Right. We celebrate the blogosphere because it embraces frank and open conversation. This is very, I think, unicorn here. But
it's frankness totally unicorn.
Does not have to mean lack of civility. We present this blogger code of conduct.
Code of conduct.
See the dolphins already.
In hopes that it creates a culture that encourages both personal expression and constructive conversation.
I tried to use the word blogosphere the other day, and a friend corrected me, and I think he's right. It's blogistan.
You
step out that building, they'll blow you up.
Number one, we take responsibility for our own words in the comments we allow on our blog.
I think that's fine. That's
fair. I don't know. A lot of bloggers would not like to be held responsible for what other people say in the comments.
Yeah.
No, you can't.
Held responsible. You should take responsibility for moderating the comments.
Best you can.
Yeah, we moderate.
As best you can, but you can't. I mean, this stuff is very difficult to root out. Number two, we won't say anything online we wouldn't say in person. Number three.
Good luck with that.
We connect privately before we respond publicly. I think that's not such
no,
a bad
that's good policy.
Idea.
Well, depends on whether you're trying to make a show or not.
I called George Bush before I published that blog post the other day.
Did you? What did he say?
Knock on that. We connect. Let's see. When we believe
bounce.
When we believe someone is unfairly attacking another, we take action. That's a little scary, especially
considering mob mentality.
The blogger code of conduct has a little sheriff's badge where it says, "This is the badge he's proposing." It's a little sheriff's badge that says "Civility enforced." And then there's a little firecracker where it says anything goes for blogs that don't want to do this. We do not allow anonymous comments.
Anything goes. How can you not allow anonymous comments when people can fake an anonymous comment?
I think that's a great idea, and I actually do that on most of my blogs. I don't allow anonymous comments just to keep the spam down, but I don't think that's something you should force people to do.
Well, he says...
How do you know whether the person, Joe Smith,
you can't
who says
it.
He's, you know, he works for Boeing,
right. Yeah, right.
And he's got an address at Hotmail, and he says he's Joe Smith at right. Boeing. He's not an anonymous commenter, but in fact, he is an anonymous
right.
commenter. How do you stop that kind of anonymous?
You can't. He says,
you always get an IP address.
Well, no, because
it's
you're
going to track down
Hotmail.
Every single person.
People can spoof that, of course.
Post, and people can spoof.
We require commentators to supply a valid email address before they can post. Though we allow commentators to identify themselves with an alias rather than their real name. Well, I could tell you, I get spam all the time. Now, spammers will sign up with a real email address.
Sure.
They'll get authenticated, and then they'll still fill you with spam.
Again, it's a nice speed bump, but it's not really going to stop anything.
Slow them down. Number six, we ignore the trolls.
That's just good policy, sure. Don't feed the trolls.
We ignore the trolls. I don't know. It's
like from Atlantis. It's corny.
On a serious note, how do you solve the fundamental issue, whether it's an email or whether it's anonymous blog postings, of somebody receiving, serious harassment?
They harassed Kathy Sierra. There's no question about it. But what do you do?
FBI, if you got something like that going on, if it's bad.
Yeah, I mean, she in fact says she pursued it with.
Yeah, and you have to do that. In the real world of celebrities offline, people who actually walk around in flesh and blood, they have to hire security guards. You know, if you're a TV anchor or a star in sports or Hollywood, you got to have security. That's just the way it is.
If you're Eric Schmidt,
not good, but you got to have it.
You got to have security.
That's right.
I think this is a fine idea because it focuses the debate and gets people talking about it. And some people who are just getting into blogging, who really don't understand what they're getting themselves into, can look at this and find out, oh, these things could happen. Okay, now I know some basic, like, don't feed the troll sort of stuff. But I don't think it's really going to change anything. I think the fundamental thing is that people have to learn, as we pointed out, and we have on the internet over the years, how to deal with this sort of anonymous community. Because when you have that anonymity, even if you're logged in with your email address, you have that feeling of an anonymity that you can say anything. I don't know how many times people have emailed me these horrible, flaming, hate-filled emails. All I do is write them back and say, oh, sorry I upset you. Here's why I said that. They write back apologizing.
Yeah.
Because you're a real person on the other end. I didn't know
Tom,
that.
I have that same experience. I get these guys, not always, but because some people just don't like you. But you get these crazy comments from somebody. Say, well, wait a minute, I didn't even, I think you took it the wrong way because I meant to say this. And then the guy's like, first he's like a lion, and the second email you get from him, he's a pussycat.
Usually.
Oh, thanks. Well, thanks. And the first thing, they fall all over themselves thanking you for responding.
Yeah.
I responded like 99%, unlike Leo, I responded like 99% of my email. And so people are always shocked by that because I think they expect to send me some nasty note and I'm not going to read it, or it's going to be read by some secretary, which I don't have. And, I just read it myself. I've got nothing else. I really don't have much of a life. I sit and read email.
You got to train those chickens to read it.
I think it is a good idea. I agree with you. I think it's a good idea to raise the conversation, at least say we care a little bit about this. There's obviously nothing you're going to be able to do about it, but it's good to say you care. Webby Award nominations are out. Has anybody read them?
Does anybody care?
There are over 100 nominees. Great. There are so many categories, it looks like a phone book.
I hope they all win twice.
Wow, it must be the phone book in Greenville, Illinois, then.
It's not small.
They were very aggressive this year because I got solicited to enter the Dvorak.org/blog uncensored website. And I told them I wasn't interested. This thing is not an award winner, and to be honest about it. because I've been a judge in enough competitions to know what's a winner in terms of winning something like that and what's not. And I wasn't about, well, go ahead and try anyway, she says. You know, you never know.
You never know.
It's an honor just to be nominated.
It's an honor just to enter.
But the thing is, of course, it's a fee. It's a fee-based.
It's a sales
deal. And then you come to the dinner.
Deal.
Yeah, and then, that's why, there's so many people. Wine competitions are the same way. If you all these wine competitions that are all over the place, they're all with rare exceptions. There's a couple that aren't, but most of them are fee based. So you pay $100 and you have to enter you have to bring in two cases of the wine you've entered. And I've talked to some PR people in the wine industry about this. It says, hey, it's an investment of $200 or an investment of $100 in a couple of cases of wine. You win, you lose. What difference does it make? If you win, it's worth way more than $100 in publicity. And so that's kind of the thinking with these competitions. I'm just like lists, as everyone listens to me complain, knows that I complain about lists. I this is the same thing.
You want to hear the categories? Actually, we don't have time. It's only a 4-hour podcast. But I mean, it is every activism, art, associations, automotive, banking, beauty, best copy, best home, best navigation, best practices, best use of animation, best use of video, best visual design, best blog. I mean, that's just
best use of Ajax, please.
Did you, are you on the list, Leo?
Is there a what?
Website?
There's one podcast category. The nominated podcasts are The Guardian Unlimited, NPR, Scientific American, Spout, and The Onion, all of which, I don't know Spout, but all the rest.
Spout's a film podcast I hadn't heard of until I just read the nominations.
I'd agree with the rest of them. I mean,
is the Webster Award still pretty
You're not nominated.
San Francisco centric?
No, this is in New York now.
It's in New York now?
Yeah,
I think they moved it up.
Do they have a category for best award show?
Arts and Sciences.
Webby's notwithstanding, I would like to make mention of the fact that in this month's in-flight magazine for Southwest Airlines, they had the listing of the top 10 podcasts in various categories.
Guess who was on tech?
The number one tech podcast, according to this magazine, ELTV, which is a pretty substantial
Buzz
publication, was guess what? TWIT.
Really? I'd have given it to Buzz Out Loud.
Oh, shucks. You're making me turn red over here.
Actually, it's not you. It's the girls.
I know. That's why I'm turning red. Angry.
You're just there for, to keep them apart. That's all.
I'm token.
So, yeah, right. When is Molly coming back, by the way?
So what can you say?
When is Molly coming back, by the way?
Oh, Molly, I just saw her actually the other day. She's doing very well. If anybody who doesn't know, Molly Wood is one of the co-hosts of Buzz Out Loud, who just had a baby about a month ago. And she will be back to work for good in June. Around the time the iPhone comes out, she'll come back.
Right.
And then she's going to try to start calling in for the podcast then when she gets time.
So she had a boy or girl?
She had a boy.
Great.
And he's already got his order in for an iPhone.
Like the other million people.
Yeah, like the millions of people.
My 15-year-old daughter has ordered me to give her an iPhone. That's kind of like getting an order in. Let's see. What else is going on? Nielsen says they're going to follow TV viewers out of the house and into the streets.
It's about time.
Yeah, ratings for TV viewing in bars, hotels, gyms, offices.
Dorms?
They added dorms earlier this year, and it revolutionized cable ratings.
Does it change the number?
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Harry, tell us about that.
Hugely. Because people in dorms watch completely different things than old retired people in trailer parks.
Mm. Yeah,
and so
all kinds
of the younger demo cable networks now are raising their rates and realizing they actually have an audience.
Too bad they did that after
TV. During Tech TV.
Yeah.
We were all dorm.
We were the dorm channel, I believe.
A lot of people don't realize that the dorms were not rated for years and years.
I didn't know that until now.
They never rated anything. Bars, hotels,
nope.
Nothing but houses.
Crazy.
I read there's a couple really good websites that break down advertising splits and break down the whole Nielsen rating system, and it's some of the most depressing reading you'll ever do when you realize just exactly how restricted and how controlled those are.
Wonder when they're going to start monitoring showers.
Shower televisions?
A Geek Squad repair member is being accused of videotaping one of his clients while she was in the shower.
Yeah, whoops. Geeks.
Best Buy's being sued because apparently the Geek Squad guy came in. He started work on the computer, then asked to use the bathroom. Later, the lady of the house showered in the same bathroom. When she stepped out of the stall, she noticed a cell phone propped up on the sink. When she returned, the phone was gone. She removed the memory chip. She found it later, removed the memory chip, took it to the Verizon store where they watched the guy set up the camera. and then leave the room.
How did he know she was going to take a shower?
Nitwit.
Maybe he told her she stinks and she took the hint. I don't know.
Just be careful next time you invite the Geek Squad.
Also, how's she going to sue him if she stole his memory card?
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point. That's vigilante justice right there.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. He may get off on a technicality.
Yeah.
A British man is
swift kick. I'm sure.
British. This is, we're getting to the bottom of the barrel
it's
now.
It's like, what a scumbag.
Isn't that creepy? Isn't that creepy? We're getting to the bottom of the barrel. These are the weird stories. British man has met and married a 22-year-old woman after, he says, dreaming of her phone number and then sending her a text message. David Brown, 24, woke up one morning after a night out with friends. He had a telephone number running through his head. He decided to send her a text message saying, "Did I meet you last night?" The random recipient, Michelle Kitson, was wary and confused at first, but decided to reply. They began exchanging messages and fell in love, and now they're getting married.
Best pickup line I've ever heard. Please. He found her on the internet somehow. He found her MySpace page.
I dreamt of you all night.
Yeah, anybody believe that? I got a bridge, I'll sell you.
I fell asleep next to the phone book.
And your name was in it. Samsung says they're going to make a combo HD DVD Blu-ray player like LG is making, and this one
has
a
lot of potential.
Yeah, because it'll have
the joke of this is that Samsung was the first one to announce that they were going to do this way back when, if you remember Twit number 3 or whatever, and then they bailed out. Now they're, you know, playing catch up.
It's called,
I don't think they were bailed out so much as Sony told them they weren't going to do it.
No, I think that's true too, but I think Samsung's got a lot of marketing problems. Samsung's lost its main marketing guy, Peter Wiedfeld, about a year or year and a half ago, who went to Circuit City, and then they lost one of their other top marketing guy, who went to Westinghouse to do the LCDs there, and I think it's a rudderless ship, and people inside, kind of in and around the company, tell me that what happened was it was just a political thing, and the company's really got some issues, I think.
It'll be good news for consumers, though. With two of these, the prices have to drop. I mean, LG's charging $1,200 for its dual player.
And the Samsung one's supposed to have full functionality, right?
Yeah, it's Blu-ray interactive, yeah.
Well, there's two things. And one, that's actually streeting for a lot closer to $850 if you shop around carefully.
Okay.
It actually does a pretty good job. If you can give up not having menus, it does a pretty good job with HD content. But with the lower price on HD and Blu-ray players, or an HD plus a PS3. PS3 is a fantastic Blu-ray disc player.
Right.
There's just not much point right now for that. For the
1200's crazy. Yeah, you could get an Xbox and a PlayStation 3 almost.
Yeah. Well, Heron just did a great roundup for PC Magazine of all the second generation players, and now he's actually putting together a third one for all the third generation players.
So Toshiba's now down to $300 for the second generation. Is that a decent? Does he like that one?
It's a pretty good solid player.
$300 is, now you're talking.
Has anybody modded the PS3 to accept the Xbox 360 external HD DVD drive?
No. That's going to be problematic.
It's a challenge.
Well,
so
much is in software. Don't you think that would be a tough thing?
Yeah, they're probably right.
You'd have to create an application that could play the HD content on the PS3.
Right.
And I don't think anybody's... I think we're a long way from it, because it's pretty easy to take that HD drive and buy third-party software, some of which is better than others, to play the content.
Speaking of which, we've seen the first key revocation now on WinDVD. That was the software most people believe was being used to crack the AACS high-def disc.
And it ends up being a moot point because they've got a workaround already.
Already?
Yeah.
That's what I've been told, yeah.
Well, I think one of the reasons I think it's important is there was some speculation, they'll never do a key revocation. You don't have to worry about that.
I think that's the way. They'll probably never do a hardware key revocation.
Well, they may not need to. I mean, it's much more likely that you'd be using software to do this copying, right?
Right.
So, I mean, how are you going to use a hardware DVD player anyway?
So
there's a workaround.
You could get the digital out of it somehow.
Yeah, I suppose.
Let Huang loose on it,
Yeah, true. Bunny can break anything. So let's talk about Carl T. Rove.
Here you go, Harry.
Those emails are not lost. They're just sitting in servers.
4 years worth of email from White House senior advisor Carl Rove to the Republican National Committee disappeared. Being sought as part of the investigation into the Bush administration.
Actually, it may have gone to hundreds of different people. It was just on the National Committee's servers and using their email system. We don't know who they went to.
So what was the email system? What was their back end? Does anybody know?
No, but I'm told that almost everybody in Washington uses Microsoft Exchange. Outlook and yeah. Exchange, and so it's probably pretty standard stuff.
Who's
Exchange
the ISP?
Server, you think? I mean, it seems to me if you're going to do is kind of a surreptitious outside the purview kind of email system to keep people from snooping, which is what they were trying to do, or trying to keep, you know, back channel is what it was, that you would use something non-standard that was even proprietary and you weren't backing anything up ever.
I think you're giving them a great deal of credit for being a lot more sophisticated yeah. than they are.
The fact that they use the email
they
in the first place.
They should have asked me.
Senator Leahy of Vermont, chairman of the Judiciary Committee, said, you can't erase emails, not today. This is on the Senate floor. He says they've gone through too many servers. And you know, he sounded pretty good. Leahy has always been pretty good on tech issues. He says, those emails are there. They just don't want to produce them. It's like the infamous 18-minute gap in the Nixon White House tapes.
Well, actually, the Republican National Committee, to their credit, has admitted that they've now got forensic software going in looking for the stuff. Because what Karl Rove and his buddies obviously did, or somebody did for them, or somebody did accidentally, who knows what the real story is. But they just, all they did was delete it, which means they took out the index. But the emails are all still there.
Right, they just took off it.
Yeah, so they're going to they'll snoop around with forensic.
Wiped.
We heard the same story about Ken Lay a few years ago. You know, all his emails were gone. Oh, they were there. Somebody had just gone through and, quote, deleted them, which means they're stuck in the server without an index.
Right. White House spokeswoman Dana Perino says, we've been forthcoming, honest. We're trying to understand to the best of our ability the universe of the emails that were potentially lost, and we are taking steps to make sure we use the forensics that are available to retrieve any of those that are lost. I like the word lost.
Now, if you could do that with a Valley Girl voice, I think you'd have something.
Senator Ted Stevens needs to help out. They just need a plunger in the tubes.
Stuck in the tubes!
Yeah. Mm.
Have you guys seen the story that Google's buying DoubleClick?
Yes.
Yep. $3 billion plus.
So that's there were rumors this was going to happen. So is
holy
it official?
Cannoli.
Yeah, it's done.
So yeah, is Google there was now the officially evil? Today.
Or is DoubleClick good? That's the other side.
Well, as I was pointing out to somebody today, having come from the old media world, until Google's to the point where they can start to compete with the real big media companies that make billions of dollars selling professional sports to other guys who watch it on television, they're still going to be a minor media company. They cannot get the kind of rates you get for the Super Bowl, for the NCAA playoffs, for a single Tiger Woods golf tournament. Until they get into that league, they're still just a little internet company. I don't care what their capital is.
The $10 billion
is.
Internet advertising market doesn't compete with the $65 billion United States television advertising market?
Doesn't even begin. And you add the international television market, the internet market starts to look like a little pea way over on the edge of the dinner table.
You don't think it could become as big in a few years?
Not unless they control video, because we all know that ultimately that's where the money is. The money is in video. Whether it's sports, whether it's movies, whether it's entertainment.
And Google's trying to get into video.
And if Google can't sell the ads on all the video on the internet like they can around text, then they're just a little internet company.
They're selling it on Dish and DirecTV, though.
Yeah, but they're not selling spots into the Super Bowl. Or to,
yet.
To
typical old
soccer games.
Response.
Boy,
you know?
Really?
Well, no, I'm not saying they can't get there. I'm just saying they're still a small company until they do get there.
I was just trying to make a blogosphere joke. That's
that was a good one. I liked it.
Blogistan, please.
Blogistan.
Recording Industry Association of America and the Motion Picture
Association. Hey, wait, Leo. What? Let's get back to this.
Google DoubleClick. You got more?
Well, I'm thinking, how come they couldn't replicate what DoubleClick was doing in the first place? I didn't think that their technology was so outstanding that they would have to spend $3 billion in a make-buy decision.
Is it worth
to
twice what YouTube
come
was
on.
Worth?
Actually, I think in this case, it's purchasing the relationships.
That's what
I was
tracking,
just going to say. They're buying market share, which is what you always do if you're trying to build a monopoly in America.
You're buying the clients.
Share. If you're an airline, you buy the other airline and take their customers, period.
So what you're telling me, which I'm not going to disagree with, but what you're telling me in a nutshell is, or an eggshell, as it were, is that Google can't see actually deciding to compete with a company like DoubleClick and maybe take a few years to beat them down, but instead just buy them out.
Yeah, why bother when you've got that big barn of cash? You just go shovel some into the back of a truck and go buy DoubleClick.
Yeah. It's all funny money from Google's point of view.
Don't they kind of have to spend it? I mean, what are they going to do with it?
Yeah.
It's not worth anything unless
they should buy the Twit podcast.
Yeah, we're for sale at the right price.
$1 billion.
$1 billion!
Right.
That'll go a long way in Petaluma.
It sure will. That's a lot of chicken.
You could buy an entire trailer park for that.
A lot of little T-Rexes running around.
The Leo Laporte Butter and Egg Festival, brought to you by Twits.
Tom's referring to the fact that it's kind of interesting. Paleontologists have been able to harvest actual protein from a T-Rex bone, a million-year-old T-Rex bone, and analyze it, and it turns out it's very similar to chicken protein.
I read that story, and my first thought was, how cool is that? My second thought was just the whole moment in the second Jurassic Park movie where, oh, yeah, it's neat. Then there comes the killing and the screaming
first
and the fighting.
They've already decided, I think, that many of these dinosaurs, including perhaps the T-Rex, had feathers.
Yeah, there's some thought to that, but...
So it's like a giant chicken.
It's a big chicken.
So now if it's a giant chicken, it must have, you know, the eggs must have been, I mean, you could feed a regiment.
Oh, they were huge. Well, we've seen the eggs.
Tasty.
Dinosaur eggs are gigantic, you bet.
Think of the size of stove you'd have to griddle one of those babies.
The colonel had a big challenge back in those days.
No way. You'd knock a hole in the side of it and aim a flamethrower at it, and everybody gets a hard-boiled in the shell egg.
When they sucked eggs.
Well, talk about predators. I grew up in the country, and you don't want to be a grasshopper in the chicken lot. They last about 2 seconds. Wait,
that's not an aphorism. That's literally true.
That's literally true, baby.
I had to think about that for a second.
No, you don't want to think about it.
I gotta put that on Jaiku. You don't want to be a grasshopper in the chicken lot.
Is it Jaiku? Is that how it's pronounced?
Jaiku, yeah.
Not haiku or yaiku or yaiku or jaiku.
It's
or,
not Spanish.
They're Finnish. They're from Finland.
So it's juiced, but they pronounce it juiced instead of juiced.
No, it's Jaiku, I believe.
Okay.
According to the founders, it's pronounced like haiku with a J. Of course, that doesn't really answer anything.
What's J?
How do they pronounce
J?
Haiku?
Haiku.
Haiku with a J.
You know, like you have like hefe, haiku.
Now I've forgotten the aphorism, and I'm never going to get it.
You don't want to be a grasshopper in the chicken lot.
Okay, that's going to be the name of the show. Today, the RIA, not today, someday. A couple of days ago, I'm just reading. The RIAA and MPAA lobbied legislators for permission to lie and steal and cheat. State of California apparently considering a bill, a privacy law, banning the use of false statements, pretexting particularly, and other misleading practices to get personal information.
They're asking for a stay that they will be allowed to pretext.
We want a waiver. We want to be able to do that.
Yeah, but they promised they wouldn't use it for anything bad.
Right. So you could trust them.
Yeah.
We all love the RIAA. Did everybody see that little survey that a website did? It was mostly among technical types, but they had a sweet 16 for the worst corporations in America. And the final four included, of course, three that you would guess right away, being Exxon, Walmart,
Halliburton,
and Halliburton. Oh, and guess who beat them all in the finals? The RIAA was the most hated corporation in America. They have displaced lawyers as the worst professional group in the country. That's how low they've gone.
Wow.
They should be proud of themselves.
They're number one.
They're number one.
I don't know. The RIAA gets beat on all over the place. But the best one I've read so far is a bunch of smaller, basically somebody did an article about a lot of smaller record companies that directly blame the RIAA and the RIAA's efforts on behalf of, you know, the major labels and the major distributors directly for just killing their business.
It was two small record store owners in New York wrote an editorial. I think it was it the New York
That's
Times?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I read that too.
Yep. They have done more to destroy the music business than all the crappy recordings in history.
Well, what's amazing is like you realize pretty much 50% of all CD sales in the United States run through Walmart, Best Buy, and Target. And 20 to 25% of that is Walmart. So, you know, Walmart especially, they do the loss leading on discs, they get cheap prices, get people in there to buy other stuff. And, you know, all of a sudden everybody else looks expensive by comparison. It's a really interesting conversation. I don't know. Sorry.
No, I think it is. I think it's right.
Sad because it's getting harder and harder to find. You know, I mean, it's great because we have Amoeba Records here in town, but it was a real bummer to see Tower Records finally die.
Thanks, Patrick. Nice buzzkill.
Oh, man, all right. I think I just want to go home and get
There's a new Windows DNS flaw.
That's better.
Targets Windows 2000 server, Windows Server 2003 systems through a hole in the domain name system.
IPv6? Is it the way they support IPv6?
I'm not sure.
Or is that a different flaw?
Dangerous DNS server bug in Longhorn Code 2, says Microsoft. So,
wow.
It's not just 2000 and 2003.
What a shocker.
You know, Vista popped its cherry last week, the first critical update for Vista on Tuesday.
What was that comment?
That was just rude.
Yeah, I could have called it.
Take that out.
I could have called it. Never mind. I better not
say
it.
You got Don Imus' producer working for you again.
I don't have the nerve, even on a podcast that no one listens to, I still don't have the nerve to say that. I tried to. You know, a DJ just got fired for making that the phrase that pays, I think somewhere in Massachusetts.
Really?
Yeah. So there's resonance. It's resonance. It's echoing. It's echoing all around.
Resonant evil.
Yeah. Whoa. All right. I'm going to wrap this sucker
I hate
up.
It when you do that.
Now that we've got it back on a high note, Tom Merritt is. You can hear that kind of humor and more on Buzz Out Loud. That's bol.cnet.com. It is, despite what Southwest Airlines says, the best tech podcast in the world. And
oh,
you hear it
shucks.
Every single day.
Thanks, and Leo will be on it on Monday.
And I'll be on it on Monday.
Which will make it twice as good.
I like the old log rolling.
Yeah, we're keeping that alive, John. This is it. Harry Fuller, of course, is also at CNET. He is executive director. Are you kind of in any way responsible for Buzz Out Loud or CNET TV?
I try not to be.
He tries to disavow
all
responsibility
as far away as I can. Right. I'm mostly on the news end of the company.
Got it. CNET TV is looking good. I like it.
Yeah, thanks. It is.
CNET's back
Thank
in the
you.
TV business, baby.
Yeah, where it started. Back to its roots.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it?
Yep.
You know, I was a third employee at CNET. Did you know that?
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I was at KPIX when I was running that station. We were the first station in the world to put CNET television programming on television.
Oh, that's right.
In 94.
But that's because it had your guy. What's his name?
Well, no, they were using Kate Kelly at that time.
Oh, it was Kate.
Hart was from Channel 4.
Richard Hart was from 4R.
Yeah.
Talk about an inside baseball moment.
Very inside baseball moment.
Richard Hart, I think, is retired and living in Montana on his millions. I think he got quite a bit of CNET stuff.
He got in the right part of the tech
boom. I got in a little early. See, it was me, Halsey, and Shelby, and Halsey and I just didn't hit it off. That's when I went to ZD, and the rest is...
Toast.
Toast.
This is an empty bank account.
Yeah,
you know, I think you did all right, Leo.
All right.
You know, you've done all right over the last few years.
I got a check. I'm holding in my hands. I wish you could see this, but you can hear it. A check from Cafe Press for $39.38.
Wow.
That's 1 month's revenue on Cafe. I just want 1 month's revenue.
That is exactly 100 times my yearly income from East Meets West.
I think that's a record, that $39 that anyone's ever made from
$39.38 on Twit Thongs. I don't know. Thank you very much. JohnCDvorak.org/blog. Ladies and gentlemen, you may take another drink. In fact, down the whole bottle, because that's the last time you're going to hear that on this week's episode. You'll hear it next week.
Pat, of course.
Of course you will. We couldn't do the show without John. And you know that Adam Curry won't listen unless John's on, so we have to have him on.
Right. It's one extra listener.
Everyone counts, John. Patrick Norton's at DLTV, DL.TV, and I was on that about a week ago. And now, thanks.
Fine job.
We did a tit for tat. So that was the tit, and the tat is you're coming to my show, The Lab with Leo, in May in Vancouver.
Which reminds me, I have to apply for a fresh passport.
Oh, it may be a little late. We may be seeing you in July.
Oh, actually, give me a call, and I tell you it's something you should know about if you need to get a last-minute passport.
Cool.
You pay money, they give it to you.
I just checked it and went,
It's a website.
Dvorak.org/blog, maybe?
This Week in Tech.
Another
good enough gettheborder.com
is in. Yeah, I know a guy who can put you in a truck and drive you through the border. No problem. Another twit is in the can. Thank you, gentlemen.
Maybe
the
characters are unlocked. This week, we're unlocked. This is a crap society. This is a crap generation.
Crap everywhere. There's ads everywhere.
I'm cranky, old man. This week in tech.
This has been the week from hell. I mean, everything's going on now. Our server's dead.
This week in tech.
Yeah, all right.
This week in tech.
got the answer to this. I really don't.
Let me introduce the table mates. John C. Dvorak. Kevin Rose. Patrick Norton. David Prager. Robert Heron. I got the Twit Army behind me.
Microsoft poo-pooed it.
They denied it, no problem.
It's been on your system. You're dead. It's a fool's paradise.
This is amazing.
In tech.
Baby.